Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. This morning, we're kicking off Super Bowl Sunday bright and early, helping you avoid some of the most common issues that can turn game day into a nightmare because of foodborne illness. So we're bringing in a food expert from the U.S. Department of Agriculture to review some of the major things you need to know as you gear up for your big Super Bowl party feast. Then, whether you're an employer looking for qualified and motivated workers or someone who's looking for a job or maybe seeking to change careers, we've got the resources for you as we bring in the COO from Career Resources, which serves about half the state connecting people to jobs they need. And we're going to close reminding you about an important environmental practice that Connecticut helped make famous. I'm talking about mattress recycling. We're going to connect with a spokesperson for the Mattress Recycling Council right here in Connecticut to talk about this important program that is growing nationwide, how easy it is to do, and the many ways recycling mattresses makes a positive difference to our communities and our planet. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder. Family and Children's Aid is a nonprofit organization providing behavioral and emotional services to children in 72 Connecticut communities. The agency's therapeutic foster care program is excited to announce it has launched a new, free, fast-tracked, and state-aligned training program for future families expressing interest in becoming licensed foster families. If you or someone you know has expressed interest in becoming a foster parent, you just need to call 1-888-YOU-BELONG or visit the Family and Children's Aid website, fcaweb.org. Here we are. It is Super Bowl Sunday. That's right. Game day, the big game. And a lot of things from the playing field all the way through to the viewing experience is going to be quite a bit different. But one thing is for certain, if we want to keep some semblance of sameness and comfort here on Super Bowl Sunday, it is probably going to be around the food that we're going to consume. Maybe we're going to consume a little bit less because there's hopefully a lot fewer people at your Super Bowl party this year. The preparation of that food is going to have to be done. Certainly the serving of that food is going to have to be done a lot different. And we're going to get you ready to make sure that tomorrow you're feeling really good about your experience and not calling in sick because of some sort of a stomach bug or food poisoning or other issue. And if we got the person to clue us in on everything we need to know, Laura Scott is with us. She is with the USDA. She's a food safety expert. And Laura, you know, I'm going to hike the ball to you now, and we're going to talk a little bit about game day. First of all, from the USDA's perspective, what are a couple of the things that COVID has brought to the table that you are concerned about and you're working to warn people about in terms of things like preparation and handling?
Yeah, that's a great question. Really, from a food safety perspective, we are just even more encouraging people to follow the four steps to food safety because they are a great way to prevent the spread of many illnesses, including foodborne illness. So we really encourage people to follow the four steps to food safety. Those are clean, separate, cook, and chill. So to clean, that includes washing your hands often and properly. So you want to wash your hands with soap and water, scrub for 20 seconds, and then rinse and dry with a clean towel. This clean step also includes keeping your kitchen surfaces clean and sanitized. So that's a two-step process, cleaning with soap and water and then sanitizing, and also keeping utensils clean. The next food safety step is separate, and that means keeping your raw meat separate from other foods so you can prevent cross-contamination. So that could mean using separate cutting boards for meat and other foods and even preparing your vegetables and other foods before you work with the raw meat. The next step is cook. So that means cook thoroughly. And the important thing is to use a food thermometer to make sure that your food reaches the safe internal temperatures, that's actually the only way to tell that your food is actually thoroughly cooked and safe to eat. You can't judge by the color of the meat alone. You need to check the temperature. And the last step is chill. So that's a really big one for the Super Bowl Sunday, because we may want to leave our food out all afternoon, but with chill, you want to put your food in the refrigerator within 2 hours. So you don't want to leave food out for longer than 2 hours.
Very good. Well, let's break things down a little bit and go back to step number one and talk a little bit more in depth about prep. I guess anybody who was already expert or effective at food handling were probably a few steps ahead in the cleanliness factor when it came to COVID, because they were already washing their hands and knew all about sanitizing. But in terms of what people tend to eat and how they tend to eat it on game day or during celebrations like Super Bowl, let's talk a little bit more in depth about preparing and maintaining those cooking surfaces, especially if we're in the situation where there's going to be prepping, cooking, serving, and then while people are eating, you've gone back to prepping and cooking again.
That's a great question. So one really important tip I'll give to help keep your kitchen clean, especially if you are cooking chicken wings or any kind of chicken, a lot of people like to rinse off their poultry or wash or rinse their poultry before they cook it. And, you know, they're doing that to rinse off bacteria and whatnot. But we actually really advise against that, because what can happen is that will spread bacteria around your kitchen, which can cross-contaminate other foods. And you really don't want that. So even if you are rinsing off the chicken and then you clean and sanitize your sink, you probably aren't cleaning and sanitizing it enough, and it could still end up leading to cross-contamination. So really the only way to make sure that your chicken is, that you've killed off all the bacteria, is to cook it thoroughly. So cook it and make sure that it reaches 165 degrees by checking with a food thermometer. When you use the food thermometer too, make sure that it's just in the meat and not touching the bone. And then you can make sure that your chicken wings are safe to eat. And then you know, that's a great way to keep your kitchen clean, is not washing the chicken.
Mm-hmm. How about in terms of the utensils and the containers that we're using with either the raw foods or the raw materials that are going to end up getting put together and eventually cooked and served?
Yeah, so you want to make sure that if you're using any utensils on raw meat, that you're not using those same utensils on other foods. Use separate utensils, and also remember to wash your hands, because if you touch raw meat and then you touch a utensil that you're going to be using on, you know, foods that are not meat or not raw meat, you can still cross-contaminate. You can even contaminate your spice containers and other parts of your kitchen. So, you know, we really encourage that you wash your hands before you start cooking, but then often throughout the cooking process. And make sure that you're following all the steps. So make sure you're washing your hands for 20 seconds.
I have to tell you, Laura, it's pretty amazing, from the the aerosolized bacteria that can be distributed off of chicken if you tend to be washing it, which we've already warned you don't want to do, to the cleaning of the hands and the surfaces and all of that. It's amazingly similar to preventing the spread of this virus. It sounds like a lot of foodborne illness kind of gets spread and shared the same way that folks may end up contracting COVID-19.
Yeah, so it's very great that just following those same hygiene practices can help prevent all sorts of illnesses, right? We just have to be really diligent with washing our hands, especially right now.
So let's talk about some of the other things that are very popular. I was looking at a survey that was sent to me by our regional grocery chain Stop and Shop that was talking about how in a survey of their customers, they found that the number one dipping item is guacamole this year for some reason. And I know that that along with dairy-based dips and other types of appetizers, those are of great concern and may tend to not have the shelf life outside of a refrigerated environment or once prepped that some of the other types of apps and snacks that we're having on game day could be, right?
Yeah, that's a great point you bring up. You know, any perishable food that you're going to eat on Super Bowl game day, you don't want to leave it out for longer than 2 hours. I know that's kind of hard because we want to just have a big spread out on the table and be able to snack on it all day. But there's a couple of things you can do to make it still safe to eat those foods that are out all day. So what you want to do is keep hot food hot and keep cold food cold. So some of the foods you're mentioning, if you want to keep those cold, you can just keep them in a bed of ice, nestle them down into a bowl of ice, and make sure that you want them to stay below 40 degrees. Likewise with hot foods, you can keep them hot all day. So you can keep them in a slow cooker, in a preheated oven, on a chafing dish or warming tray, and make sure they stay above 140 degrees. And that way you can snack on them all day. So I mentioned that 40 to 140 degrees, we call that the danger zone. So if food gets in the danger zone, and like I said, you don't want to leave food out for longer than 2 hours, after 2 hours, that's when bacteria can start to grow in the food. So even if the food had been thoroughly cooked, at the beginning of the day, after those 2 hours pass, bacteria can start to grow again, and you could still get a foodborne illness. So keeping hot food hot and keeping cold food cold is a great way to keep that food good to eat all day. Now, another option, if you don't, have any of those tools or can't do any of that, is you could just, whether you're cooking or doing takeout, is divide your food up into two different portions. So have a portion for the first half of the game and a portion for the second half. You'll have one portion in the refrigerator, have the other portion out on the table, and you've got those 2 hours up until the halftime show that you can snack on those foods. And then once those 2 hours are up at the halftime show, pack those up in shallow containers and put them in the refrigerator. And then you can switch it out with the food that you had left in the refrigerator. Just reheat that food. And you're going to want to use a food thermometer when you reheat it. Make sure it reaches 165 degrees so you know it's safe to eat. And then you can snack on that food for the next 2 hours. So just follow the 2 hour rule. Also, if you want to leave food out for longer than that, keep hot foods hot and keep cold foods cold.
Well, I have one foodborne illness conscious friend who has said she uses Post-it notes, or if she doesn't have them, just little table napkins, and she writes the name of the dish and the time that dish came out of its container and out into the open atmosphere. And that way, all you need to do is every once in a while, just pick up the dish and look and see if that 2 hours has passed, in which case you got to do the right thing based on your advice, Laura. Maybe that could be something that could work for other people. What I wanted to also touch upon before we have to let you go is some of the other common items that people serve. And particularly how important that food thermometer is. These days you can buy like a digital one that's a no-brainer. You don't have to be like kind of holding it up to the light looking for where the mercury is. It'll read right out or even tell you in a little voice what the temperature is. But those can be used for hot and cold food, right?
That's a great question. I believe that you can use them for cold food as well. Because you do want to make sure that things stay below 40 degrees if you're leaving them out. So, yeah, that's a great that's a great suggestion.
Hmm. Are there any other particular types of popular meats, dishes, or even ethnic foods that you want to remind people to be specifically careful about?
So I've mentioned chicken wings. Another just really common food people might be making on Super Bowl Sunday is hamburgers. So again, you definitely want to make sure that you're using a food thermometer when you cook the hamburgers, and you want them to reach 160 degrees. And a tip for taking the temperature of the burger is to put the thermometer in the side of the burger and push it all the way into the center, just in case there's any cold spots in there. And you can make sure it all reaches 160 degrees. You know, for any other types of foods, if people have really specific questions, we have a wonderful resource. You can call our meat and poultry hotline and talk directly to a food safety expert at USDA. We're open all year round, Monday through Friday from 10 to 6 Eastern. And you can get a hold of us at 1-888-MP-HOTLINE.
Excellent. The final question I had is these days, for even folks who might be entertaining in an immediate family or a very small group in order to minimize the possible transmission of the virus, they may be doing a lot more individual packaging or breaking, like you said, you know, break down food and make half a portion for the first half of the game, another half a portion for the second, and keep them as they are supposed to be, warm or cold. But, you know, if people are doing individual servings to make sure that there's not any cross contamination or a lot of kind of double dipping and all that, does the fact that the food might end up going from one big shared container into a bunch of smaller containers have any play or factor in how that food needs to be handled?
Again, I would just say it's really important to follow good hygiene. You know, if there's one person kind of dividing the food out into smaller containers, definitely make sure that they're washing their hands and that they've washed all the utensils that they're using. But I think it can be a really good suggestion to have individual containers for individual people, especially if it's with people that don't live. If they don't live in your household and you need to kind of maintain your distance from them, it's a good idea not to have big shared dishes or finger foods that people are sharing when they don't live in the same household. So that is really good advice.
Yeah. And Laura Scott's on the line with us. We're going to say farewell to her here as we kick off Super Bowl Sunday on the award-winning For the People. She represents the USDA. She's a food safety expert, but her counterparts, I'm sure, over at the CDC also have some really good information on their website about the way to kind of handle and serve food when it comes to paying attention to not transmitting the COVID-19 virus. So that could also be perhaps another good resource for folks. Laura Scott, great to talk to you today. I hope you're going to enjoy the game no matter who you're with and who ends up being the winner. And we appreciate you and the USDA for coming through every year with us here on the program and helping us have the safest Super Bowl parties possible. So thanks. Well, as promised, we're going to talk about jobs, getting you jobs, getting you workforce if you are an employer, getting you employed if you're a job seeker. Maybe a COVID-19 has pulled the rug out from under you from a job seeking perspective. Maybe you went into the COVID-19 era already looking for work and are continuing to be challenged in finding something for yourself. We're going to hopefully provide a lot of answers and resources for you in this segment with my brand new friend, Angela Pellegrino Grant. She is the COO of Career Resources, whose mission is to significantly improve the family units here in Connecticut through employment to ensure economic opportunity in all the communities they serve. Over 70 communities in Connecticut, right? Almost half the state, Angela, right?
Right. Yeah, that's correct.
Well, thanks for joining us this morning. Obviously, you know, like death and taxes, we all need to be looking for jobs once in a while. And I'm sad to know that probably at this point, about a year and a week or two on into our COVID experience, things have been really rough on the folks that you guys support at Career Resources, along with the network of other agencies that have been on the award-winning For the People over the past year or so. So first of all, a little bit more about the agency and what you guys do, how you work, and about yourself, too. How did you get involved with Career Resources?
Sure. Well, so about us as an agency, we've been around for 25 years. We actually just celebrated our anniversary at the end of last year. And we work throughout the state. We have about 24 programs working statewide. And our focus is really on connecting people with jobs. We, in the Northwest and Southwest regions, we work closely with the regional workforce investment boards to provide services at the American Job Centers. We work with a lot of returning citizens, people who are returning from incarceration as well. We work with some of the housing providers to help with people who are exiting out of homelessness find jobs. We focus a lot, especially on people who are dealing with barriers to employment. But really, we serve anyone who needs a job, anyone who needs retraining, anyone whose skills need brushing up, who's had a hard time in the workforce. We really feel like there's something we can do to help you. Yeah.
So, and how about you? How did you find your way to be one of the leaders of this agency?
You know, it's funny. I actually, I'm a pretty recent entry into the workforce development field. I was born and raised in Connecticut, but I actually worked in Washington, D.C. for about 15 years, and I was in the public diplomacy field, which was a lot of fun, and I really enjoyed it. But, you know, family calls you home, and so I was really happy to come back to Connecticut and work in the state that really had my heart. And so I was very lucky to find Career Resources. It was just a great agency, and I had experience in nonprofit management, and so landed here.
Yeah, it's all about communication and getting your point across while being a resource to your constituents. So diplomacy, job development, workforce development, I see the overlay there, no problemo.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
we help people get communicate the way they need to in the workplace is actually a big part of some of the services we provide.
Excellent. Well, we are going to kind of split things up between now and when we go into our little midpoint break. We want to focus on what you need employers to know about the resources and support you can provide to them. And then as soon as we come back from the break, we'll spend the whole rest of the chat talking about job seekers and how you're helping them, whether they're looking for their first job, they're looking to change careers while still being employed, or that they are without a job and really need to get one as quickly as possible. So let's go to the workforce needs of Connecticut's employers and how Career Resources is able to help them.
Sure. Yeah, we know we're in contact with hundreds of employers all the time, and we know that there are businesses out there that are hiring. They really want to reach the workforce, and sometimes they're having a hard time. One thing we've been able to do in the COVID environment is actually produce virtual job fairs, where we will bring employers together on usually over Zoom or some other kind of video platform and have them talk about what their business needs are and what their corporate culture is like, and really kind of give a little pitch to to the job seekers that are out there, and we're then able to direct the people that we're serving directly to that resource and make those matches for employers. Another thing we've been able to do is actually do some virtual hiring events for employers, where we do some pre-screening for them and send them people that we think are good fits for them. And we can do that virtually without having to do the usual, you know, massive cattle call job fairs of old. And we found that that's been really helpful to employers, and we'd love to do more of it.
Well, what are a few of the reasons, or at least a main reason, why an employer should start their candidate search with Career Resources? I mean, do you guys provide the job seekers to those employers who are either uniquely qualified or predisposed to that type of work? I mean, what's the advantage of an employer just casting the net out there on some job websites versus coming through an agency like yours?
Well, part of what we do really is to work with job seekers directly to understand what their strengths are and what they're looking for in a career path. And so that means that when we're matching up job seekers with employers, we have a good feeling that it's going to be a good match. And so we're hopefully saving the employer time that way, that they're not having to sort through people who are kind of applying willy-nilly for a job, but people who are actually interested in working with that employer and are qualified to work with that employer in the positions that they're looking for.
Well, you use the Q word there, qualified, and that means perhaps bringing that potential employee to the table for that organization, company, what have you, better prepared than just the average candidate off the street. And that has to do with training. Do you work with some of the employers that you regularly place career resource candidates with in terms of getting them trained or at least some sort of orientation, so when they get to that employer, they can kind of hit the ground running and not spend that 2, 4, 6, 8 weeks kind of just figuring it all out?
Well, some of the programs that we actually run are job readiness programs. We have actually an entire division in career resources called Work Ready, and that's explicitly about having the skills that you need to exist in the working world and be successful in the working world. Sometimes we encounter job seekers who just haven't had that kind of work history where they know what it takes to be successful and to really sort of come into a corporate culture and set themselves up to be what an employer is looking for. And so we do that soft skills training to prepare them for those situations. And then beyond that, through the American Job Center system, job seekers can get connected with occupational skills trainings that around the state. And so there, when employers come to us and look for graduates of those programs, they know that the people we're working with have the credentials required to do the job.
Fantastic. Well, before we take a quick break, just remind employers where they could go to get to know Career Resources better, maybe get in queue to be part of a future virtual or eventually in-person job fair or anything else that those doing the hiring need to know.
Sure. Yeah, they can go right to our website, which is careerresources.org. They can email info@careerresources.org or call our main number, which is 203-333-5129. They need to leave a message because we're mostly virtual right now, but someone will absolutely get back to them.
Excellent.
Very quickly.
Great. Talking career development, jobs, and employment, workforce development with Angela Pellegrino Grant. She is COO with Career Resources. As you heard, careerresources.org is right where you start, and they make it so easy because as soon as you get there, there's a link for employers. So if you're looking for some support in getting the best possible candidates for the openings at your small or large business, you just go to careerresources.org and click on the link for employers. We're going to be back in just a moment, and we're going to spend the rest of our chat with Angela talking specifically to you folks who are looking for work. Stay with us. Do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting a fundraiser or community building event, or you'd like to find a nonprofit to support in your neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab, and find one, or discover some of the many causes supported by our radio station. I'm John Voquette, your public affairs director here for Connoisseur Media. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. The non-denominational nonprofit organization Acts for Ministry is seeking retired or other individuals available part-time to help with their retail-style thrift store in Waterbury. Volunteers are also sought to help clients shop the store, sort donations, and organize resources. They're also needed to help with the pickup of furniture from donors through the greater Waterbury region, cleaning, preparing, and loading of furniture onto the nonprofit's trucks for delivery to area residents, and other important activities. If you'd like to help or volunteer, you can call 203-574-2287 or email info@acts4.org or just visit their website. That's ACTS4.org, acts4.org. We're back. Thanks for hanging out with us. It's Angela Pellegrino Grant on the other end of the line here this morning at the award-winning For the People. She is COO at Career Resources, looking to improve Connecticut's families through employment to ensure economic opportunity in the communities that they serve. Nearly half the communities in Connecticut are served by Career Resources. CareerResources.org is their website. And as you may have heard, if you were with us for the first half of our chat, we talked mostly in regards to what employers may need to know and how Career Resources might be able to help them. Now we're going to spend the rest of the 8 or 9 minutes we have with Angela talking straight to you folks who are looking for work. Maybe COVID has knocked you out of the workforce. Maybe you were in a position where you were already looking before COVID was even a glimmer in our eyes here about a year ago. Or maybe you are working, but you just want to do something different, something better, and you're afraid to try to make that jump because of the current nature of the job situation. Angela, let's get started talking about what job seekers need to know and how Career Resources should be probably their first and maybe their only stop in that project.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the first thing we want people to know is that around the state, the American Job Centers are open. We're used to having people reach us. We provide services in the Northwest and Southwest regions at the American Job Centers, but they exist across the state. We're used to people, and I think our customers are used to just walking in to say hi to someone, and the offices themselves are not accepting walk-ins. And so people, we think, have been thinking that we're not there to serve them, but we absolutely are. We can still help people. A lot of our training programs are ongoing. A lot of them have converted to virtual programming, or our training vendors have made their programs COVID compliant. And so people can take advantage of those training programs. They can take advantage of our job search, resume writing, interview skill brush up services that we offer, career counseling. We offer ESL classes if that's something you need to get ahead in the working world. We offer digital literacy if suddenly you're in the position where you need to figure out how to use Zoom for your job. We can help you with that as well. So we want people to know we've found that people are having a hard time finding us, and we're here to help people.
Now, prior to COVID, your organization, and hopefully after, or once we get things under control, you guys actually do outreach too. You go to communities to go right to the people who are looking for work, you know, in a non-COVID restricted situation, right?
That's right. We have the career coach within the Southwest region that actually is a mobile, it's a enormous bus that's a mobile unit, and in the past, pre-COVID, allowed people to actually come on to the coach and do job search and learn digital literacy skills right within their communities, if they couldn't get to a job center. Unfortunately, there's been no way for us to keep COVID restrictions within the bus, and so it's not running right now. But we're really, really hopeful that we'll get to the point where we can send it out into the community again.
Yeah, I've been in the bus. It's cozy and totally not cool under the COVID restrictions. So hopefully we'll see that baby rolling out again soon. But in the meantime, as you mentioned a couple of times over the course of the interview, Angela, in 2020, despite the virus in the pandemic, you guys did more than one virtual job fair every 2 months in 2020, eight in all in the year. How are things looking for the first few that you're planning for 2021?
We're really excited about them. I think more employers are learning to embrace this kind of virtual platform, and we're super excited to get job seekers connected with these employers. There are a lot of jobs out there for people, and I think that's another thing that people don't understand, that everyone has this idea that, well, nobody's hiring right now, and that is absolutely not true. A lot of employers are hiring. We're fielding calls regularly from employers who really need the help, and they just can't find it. And so we want to make sure that people know if they are looking for work, we can help them. We have regular contact with hundreds of employers around the state, and we are more than happy to give them the support they need to connect with these employers or to become job ready or to connect them with a training program if they need an additional certification or other credential to be qualified for some of these more skilled jobs. This is a great time, honestly, if you've been considering changing careers and want to go into a different profession, this is a really good time to do it. Someone who's unemployed can potentially still qualify for a training program and not lose their unemployment benefits. So that's another misconception that we're hearing a lot, is people think that if they come to us and they get a scholarship to go into a certification program, that it's going to affect their unemployment benefits. And in most cases, it's not going to have any effect on that. So we want to get people into these high demand occupations.
Excellent. The other thing that that your organization, Career Resources, is known for many, many years is being able to get some of the most challenged job seekers placed. And among those are folks who are coming out of incarceration. And that is a real area of specialty and success under your organization, isn't it?
This is true. We care very much about the reentry community. And in fact, we're one of the co-chairs of the Bridgeport Reentry Collaborative, because we feel that employment is such an essential part of returning citizens' rehabilitation and successful reentry into society. And so we want to do everything we can to get returning citizens stable jobs and really help them fulfill their own family goals.
Sure.
And so we actually have a dedicated specialist here who work with the returning citizen population. And in addition, we actually just this past year launched a temporary staffing agency, Entry Point Staffing, specifically serving returning citizens. To give them kind of an entry back into the working world.
Right. Keeping Connecticut's second chance society employed and providing those important opportunities for them to change their life's direction for the better. A couple of quick hit items before we let you go, Angela. First of all, VITA, tax preparation assistance, you guys handle that?
Yes, we're a VITA site in the Southwest region. Okay. People can get their taxes done with us, and they should call 211 to sign up for that.
Excellent. And folks can keep abreast of everything that's happening with Career Resources by getting your e-newsletter?
Exactly. We do. We have a weekly newsletter that goes out. It goes out to over 5,000 people currently, and we'd always love to send it out to more people. It's got community events. It's got training opportunities. It's got upcoming hiring events and other resources in it. People can email info@careerresources.org to sign up for it.
Excellent. And finally, just one more time with the phone number and website, and we'll let you go so you can get some folks working.
Great. You can find us at careerresources.org, and you can call 203-333-5129. Like I said, we're all virtual right now, so leave a message when you get that through to that number, and we will call you back as soon as possible and get you set up with the right program.
Fantastic. Whether it's a employer who's looking for a ready, willing, able, and qualified worker, or someone who may be looking to change jobs, maybe you are out of work as a result of the pandemic, or were looking for work before the pandemic even arrived here in Connecticut, Career Resources is the place to go to get started and get action. That's right. You just need to go to careerresources.org. Whether you're a job seeker or employer coming out of incarceration, switching jobs, they have got all the help you need. I want to thank Angela Pellegrino-Grant, COO of Career Resources, for being part of the program. And Angela, I'm sure we'll be talking to you again soon. In the meantime, best of luck with everything, and we'll be in touch. Thanks. Well, we promised that we'd be closing the show with some information that is important to you, not only because of the environmental impact of things like mattresses and box springs, but because Connecticut really was a pioneer in the process and practice of mattress recycling. At one point, we were just one of a couple of states in the entire country that had a mattress recycling program. And now everyone seems to be following Connecticut's lead. And I'm so pleased to be able to kind of catch up on the subject with our guest this morning from the Mattress Recycling Council. Good morning, Matt. How you doing?
I'm doing well, John, and thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here to talk with you and your listeners.
So, first of all, give us a little backstory, because it is true that Connecticut was way, way out front when it came to mattress recycling, right?
That's correct. It's, they were the first state to enact the law and the program. And, being a Connecticut boy myself, it's a point of pride. And, so Connecticut was the leader in getting the Mattress Recycling Council going. It was a public act passed in 2013, and the program began in May of 2015. So we just recently had our five-year anniversary, it's really going well.
And how has this movement grown across the country since Connecticut started it now just a few years ago?
There's some new states that have come on in that time period. There are many more that are looking at it as well. Some locally. I think as a whole, these product stewardship laws are being looked at more throughout the country. And we're just happy to be the leader in mattress recycling and be here for Connecticut and the other states that have enacted laws.
Well, tell us a few of the things that are important for people to know. I mean, first of all, even over the past 5 or 6 years, or maybe say over the past decade, like everything else that's being manufactured for our homes, the materials that are being used are changing. Are the materials and contents of the mattresses and box springs that we were first beginning to recycle when this whole program started in 2013, have those materials changed much, or the way that they have to be disassembled so that they can be appropriately channeled into the various recycling avenues that a mattress and box spring can serve?
That's a great question. I think as people's preferences and different sleep products change, we do see some changes in the overall composition of what, you know, the interior of a mattress looks like. The process is still very similar. These mattresses get brought to our collection network and get given to our recyclers. And they, take the time to deconstruct those and put them into their various components. There's still a lot of metal and cloth and foam and wood that are, the major components of a mattress and box spring. And those all get broken down and recycled into their various components. I think the program, will consistently have a change in the composition of mattresses, but our recyclers are there and ready to accept those changes. And the council, does a lot of work in researching, ways to improve our mattress recyclability and markets, in anticipation of those changes in composition. And so we're definitely working on staying ahead of that trend.
Well, here in Connecticut, have we reached a point where you can only recycle mattresses and box springs? I mean, do landfills municipal transfer stations and things like that still just dump them into the waste stream if they can't be recycled, or they're not run through appropriate recycling channels?
Over the past 5+ years of the program, we've consistently and continuously expand the outreach and scope of the program in our collection network. We happy to say that of the 169 towns and municipalities here in Connecticut, we have over 140 that directly participate with us, and the vast majority of those have a bin provided by the Mattress Recycling Council at their transfer station or landfill or DPW yard or wherever exactly in town they store it. I would say you could go to buybymattress.com. We have a locator tool there. You can type your zip code in and see what your near facility is for you as a resident to bring back your mattresses. And we also work very closely with the lodging industry, educational facilities, the healthcare industry to capture all those mattresses that might be disposed of. So, we're always here to recycle every mattress that we can. I'm sure there are some that there's certain towns that don't participate at this point in time. If any of those towns are on the call right now, I would love for them to reach out to me and close those gaps in the network.
So it doesn't cost people anything to recycle mattresses through the proper channels, excuse me, if they have the facility in one of these 140 plus towns in Connecticut. But what are the other options? I recall there were locations that actually could take mattresses and box springs and return a nominal, premium or a fee back to the person doing the recycling. Is that still in effect?
Yeah. So, there's three main ways to recycle a mattress. You could bring it back to one of the collection site drop-offs. that we mentioned before. There's some in the state that, you know, are open for any state resident. You know, you could bring them directly back to the recycler. And you know, that's another drop-off facility. Or, you know, a lot of times a retailer will deliver a mattress to you, and they might offer the service of taking that back at that point in time. And we work with those retailers to make sure those units get recycled as well. You know, so we recently did a study of Connecticut and found that, you know, over 97% of the population was in close proximity to a drop-off facility. And so we're, you know, looking to make that as convenient as possible. And it is all, like you mentioned, no cost to the consumer looking to drop that off, you know, when they bring it to one of those facilities.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, Dan, nothing worse than driving through a neighborhood, or even worse, going to like a public park or a playing field or a, you know, a trail or something, and seeing someone has discarded a mattress or mattress and box spring. Certainly, if nothing more, this program has really made a huge difference when it comes to the kind of quality of life issue that the illegal dumping of mattresses brings, right?
Yes, absolutely. And I appreciate you bringing that up. Yes. I mean, that's one of the goals of the program, is to curb illegal dumping. You know, there is no cost to drop this off, drop these mattresses and box springs off through the program. So, you know, that impediment, that barrier, that would make you, you know, want to illegally dump because, you know, there's a significant cost to that. You know, we've eliminated that barrier through the program. And you know, now it's just a matter of making sure that everybody is aware of it and you know, could go to buybymattress.com and find their local drop-off location.
Very good. In the last couple of minutes that we have with you, Dan, could you remind people of the important byproducts that are in mattress and box springs that can be recycled, and in the many different ways that this material can be reused?
Absolutely. As I mentioned earlier, you know, the main kind of components of a mattress is its metal, you know, which gets sold to scrap metal markets and just, you know, melted down and made into new metal products, you know, whether that be rebar or bridges or benches or whatever. You know, the foam and the quilt panels that are in the cloth that, you know, is a large percentage of a mattress. I mean, that's oftentimes carpet padding or insulation or you know, a lot of different uses to that effect. And the wood, you know, gets used as alternative fuel resources or mulch. And you know, it's really great to have these opportunities to take these things and give them a second use and, you know, be higher up on that, you know, hierarchy of waste, you know, rather than these things going to a landfill or a waste energy plant and, you know, not having that secondary, tertiary, or, you know, infinite uses.
Yeah, it's not going in the ground or going into dumping situations and, you know, sitting there with other trash and waste for decades or centuries. It's not going into a furnace and being burned up and polluting the air. And it's also providing an opportunity to reduce illegal dumping, a true win-win-win situation. And all you need to do is remember to recycle your mattress. And with Connecticut being the first state in the country to have a mattress recycling program that's now being followed by many others, we really appreciate the work of the Mattress Recycling Council and their Bye Bye Mattress campaign in reminding us about this no-cost collection network here in Connecticut for both residential and commercial volumes, as well as the research that Dan was talking about to learn about increasing efficiency and recyclability, and of course, diverting those materials from landfills and illegal dumping. We really appreciate the time this morning. Dan McGowan is with the Mattress Recycling Council here in Connecticut. If you'd like to learn more, you can actually go to mattressrecyclingcouncil.org, or it's buybuymattress.com, right, Dan?
That's correct, John.
Very good. Great to talk to you, and thank you for this important reminder this morning, and we'll look forward to chatting with you and your cohorts at the Recycling Council again soon. Thanks. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.